Testing. Ah. Well, hello there. Welcome to the story of us. From cosmic dawn to the depths of being. I'm your host, Jeff Ellison. Thanks again for tuning in. It's been a great first season. You know, we've kind of been trying to figure this thing out from the trailer episode all the way to our most recent podcast with Miss Molly Casero-Jones. It's been a great ride. We've learned a lot along the way, and I appreciate you tuning in. It's just me today, but I got an important message for you, and I think you guys are going to feel like me. You're going to feel like it's an important time to have this topic. So here I am. I'm rocking my 1990 J-Town All-Stars full outfit, and I'm taking it back in time a little bit, but here's what I ask. I'm asking for everybody to be patient with me. I'm from the 1900s, 1975 to be exact. 75 was a pivotal year in technological innovation. It was the equivalent of the Big Bang, the year that Bill Gates and Paul Allen founded Microsoft, intending to write software for the new Altair 8800 personal computer. The year Atari introduced Home Pong and completely ruined family harmony forever. 1975 was the year Sony introduced the Betamax VCR for the low, low price of $2,295, which in today's dollars is roughly the cost of a Honda Civic. Okay, since my birth, I think I've been through it all. Guys, I've used a quarter to call home from a payphone. I've navigated entire cities, states, and countries with a paper map and some blind ambition. I've returned a page from a SkyTel pager, which was totally cool in the 1990s, guys. I've taken photographs not knowing how shitty they were going to turn out until I had them developed weeks later. I've put needle to vinyl LP. I've blown in a Nintendo cartridge, rewound a cassette tape with a number 2 pencil, and I've even repaired scratched compact discs with a highlighter. Yeah, don't ask me how it worked, but, you know, somehow it did. I've set the VCR to record so I didn't miss an episode of the A-Team or Miami Vice. I was kind and did, in fact, rewind my Blockbuster rentals most of the time. I've owned actual calculators and actual flashlights. I've kept a written planner, a written calendar, and a written address book. I've read newspapers, honest to God newspapers. I've had magazine subscriptions, and I've stiffed Columbia House for free CDs more than a few times. Hell, I've even been required to carry cold, hard cash and drive across town to make purchases from actual stores. So look, if I sound a little fried, it's because my generation has been asked to adopt, adapt, and interface with more brand new technology in 50 years than any humans in history, and by a lot. And honestly, I'm tired. I'm getting old, and I'm throwing out the SOS signal. So today, we're going to dig in and explore what's really happening to all of us, why our brains feel so flooded, and how we can break some habits that are slowly drowning us. All right, deep breath. Let's get into it. So we probably should have called today's episode The Information Deluge, Why Your Brain Feels Flooded, and we're going to talk a little bit about how to breathe again. If you're like me, by the time your head hits the pillow, your brain feels like a giant bowl of oatmeal in a steel cage. I like to blame my smartphone, my email inbox, and social media, but maybe technology and our devices aren't my real problem. Maybe it's the relationship I have with them. I wake up each morning to the alarm on my smartphone, charged and ready and always by my bedside. I then decide what to do next. Pee, check my phone, or check my phone while I pee. I barely wake up, and before my coffee cools, the tidal wave has already crashed over me. Pings, posts, emails, push notifications, news alerts, advertisements for crap I don't need. once it starts, it never stops. Our ancient brains, built for dawn light and bird song, now swim every day in an ocean of bits and bytes. No wonder we feel underwater, anxious, and overwhelmed. We're just not evolved to process information like a supercomputer. Something's got to give here, guys. Okay, so let's rewind a bit and see how we all got here as a species. So here, I'm going to give you a short history of the human data diet. Okay, so picture humanity's relationship with information as a three-act play. A long, slow prologue followed by two plot twists so abrupt they rattled our species to the core. We'll call Act 1 the oral and local era. This is most of human history. For tens of thousands of years, everything you knew came from the natural world and from other human beings. It was a neighbor's warning, a hunter's tale, the color of the clouds, the way the ground felt before a storm, or the sound of approaching hooves. Information was intimate. It was slow. It was digestible. You took your gentle cues from the ebbs and flows of the world around you. Knowledge traveled at the speed of footsteps, speech, and memory. We evolved in this way for thousands of years in a world where the signal strength was weak. Your daily feed was your village, maybe 150 humans max. And honestly, that was plenty. But then came Act Two. We'll call this the print and broadcast explosion. And that lasted roughly 500 years. This is when Gutenberg popped on the scene, the OG technology disruptor, and the quiet world of ink and paper violently multiplied. Europe leapt from, say, a few thousand hand-copied manuscripts to nearly 9 million printed books by the year 1500. Ideas no longer strolled down an ancient Roman roadway. They stampeded across whole continents and cultures. Information crossed borders and ideas accelerated humans through the Renaissance, past the Scientific Revolution, and straight up into the Age of Enlightenment. So by the 20th century, a voice transmitted through copper wire suddenly claimed 4 hours of every day. Radios became hearths our family circled around for information and entertainment. Not long thereafter, in the 1950s, television became the new campfire story, broadcast not to dozens, but to millions of people. Our world got louder, but still at a pace we could handle. Then came Act Three. This is what we'll call the digital and omnipresent deluge. It's about the last 40 years. The blink of an eye, really, in the course of human development. And Act Three didn't just arrive on the scene, it blasted through a wall like the Kool-Aid Man. Communication, technology, and computation didn't casually evolve. They went straight from zero to Star Trek warp factor one before we knew what even hit us. Data didn't grow, it detonated, bursting across the planet like confetti cannons at a party. In the late 1990s, I got my first email address through the University of Kentucky, and I trekked to the library with my flip phone in my pocket to check the one or two messages I received each week from some professors. Now, it wasn't long before my roommate, Will Barber, shout out to Will, he got an Apple computer, and I can recall vividly the pings and dings of our AOL dial-up connection, screaming like a robot melting down. Those first internet images slowly uploading on the screen. But in the 2000s, technology erupted. By 2007, we were already drowning in 3 × 10^20 bytes of data and transmitting 2 × 10^21 bytes every year. And that was quaint compared to now. Today, We create hundreds of millions of terabytes every 24 hours. We no longer just encounter information. We swim in it. We choke in it. We drown in it. It follows us into every room, every moment, every small break in the action. It's omnipresent, a second atmosphere pressed against us at all times. Suddenly, your village is now the entire freaking planet, whispering, shouting, broadcasting, and algorithmically amplifying itself into your mind every waking moment. If a small tragedy occurs in one part of the globe, or a minor catastrophe happens in another, humans all over the world can read about it, or relive it over video, mere minutes later. Worse yet, we're hardwired to empathize and absorb all that human suffering. It's not healthy. And really, our ancient brains are doing their best to keep up. I know mine's really struggling. These are the currents you're swimming through. Let's give you some data, as if you don't already have enough. The modern human brain processes about 74 gigabytes of data daily. Now, what's 74 gigabytes of data? That's the equivalent of watching 16 movies every single day. Our information overload is driven by relentless and constant input, with media exposure occupying an average of 11 or 12 hours per day. Teens are hit the hardest. I feel for the teens. Teens commonly see 200 plus notifications a day, 200 or more notifications every single day. Us adults average dozens just from our mobile devices alone. Each a micro tax on our attention span and our absorption capacity. Meanwhile, the sea of data itself is rising. The world creates more and more data every second. An ambient, always-on churn that is beyond human scale. Guys, our intake capabilities and the environment's output, they've diverged. The result feels like cognitive high tide, even before we add misinformation, disinformation, artificial intelligence surges, and bot farm barrages to the swell. Misinformation itself, guys, that's especially overwhelming. Falsehood doesn't just compete with truth. It sprints ahead, leaps farther, crashes deeper, and echoes louder. A lie laps the truth twice and then posts a victory dance on TikTok. False news doesn't trickle out. It pressure washes us. Research shows that falsehood spreads farther, faster, deeper, and more broadly than the truth, often by an order of magnitude. In fact, lies were found to be roughly 70% more likely to be reshared than true stories. 70%. And during the COVID pandemic, the global flood of conflicting data and rumors and outright lies became so overwhelming that the World Health Organization coined a term for it. They called it an infodemic. This wasn't simply more headlines. It was a tsunami of words, images, claims, and fears. Official truths, half-truths, and dangerous fabrications all jostled for our attention in the same stream. Man, this made it nearly impossible for ordinary people to separate signal from noise. And the infodemic didn't vanish with COVID. Instead, in the last 5 years, it's morphed, amplified by new tools and technologies. AI-generated images and videos, deep fakes, sensational headlines engineered to go viral, and algorithms hungry for engagement. In fact, I saw this just the other day. Oxford's 2025 word of the year, rage bait. Didn't know what rage bait was, but it's defined as online content deliberately designed to elicit anger or outrage. When you combine platforms optimized for novelty and speed with human brains wired for things like emotion, surprise, and shortcuts, you're creating a perfect storm. And the result? the more we scroll to quote unquote keep up, the more unmoored we feel. The more we consume, the less certain we actually become. This isn't just about occasional fibs. It's about trust, reality, and the social bonds that depend on them. When lies spread faster than facts, when every image, every video, or every post could be doctored or distorted, faith in what we read or hear online becomes a luxury. In that world, discernment becomes survival, and humans can simply no longer believe anything we see or hear online. So, how do we cope without retreating into a cave? If you're feeling the urge to chuck your phone to the nearest river and adopt a caveman lifestyle, you ain't alone. The digital world is loud. It's needy. I understand how you feel. Look, the temptation to go full hermit is real. But since most of us can't disappear into the woods and live off berries, let's talk some solutions. I'll tell you what. Let's start to take control and make good choices. That's a good place to start. We're not powerless. We're just overwhelmed. And building better habits is how we reclaim the driver's seat. So treat your attention span like an ecosystem. And you're the park ranger. Your job isn't to completely wall off the forest. It's to keep the invasive species from taking over. We need to shift the conversation from focusing on the barrage of information and the devices themselves toward what our relationship is with both of them. So here's some things I find really helpful. I've been really struggling with this lately, guys. So number one, start your day in a positive way. All right, don't laugh, but I say this to myself each morning when I get out of bed. Jeff, start your day in a positive way. This reminds me that the early morning minutes are the best time to relax, ease into my day, have some me time, and reflect. So what's healthier than doom-scrolling Twitter? How about a cup of coffee, a warm blanket, and a few chapters of whatever book you're reading? The time commitment for that? Usually equal. So some other great morning rituals that I love. 5 minutes, a 5-minute guided meditation. They're available on iTunes, Spotify, your Apple Fitness. There's a million different places. Start with 5 minutes. Put some headphones in. See if you can just give yourself 5 minutes to sit, reflect, be with your thoughts, and be present. You know, it's harder this time of year with the weather, but a walk around the neighborhood, that's a great start to your day. Or my favorite is knocking out my favorite exercise routine, and yours can be whatever it is, but just knock it out. You're going to feel empowered and energized all the rest of the day. So the second thing that I think would be a good start for you would be, why don't you begin a low-friction information diet? So what I mean by that? So think of your data consumption like mealtime. Grazing nonstop all day leaves you feeling bloated and cranky. But a few intentional feedings, that works. Also, hey guys, we don't eat meals in bed and at all hours of the night, so let's not consume data there either. Try this. Set 2 or 3 windows where you actually check things, and not at the same time you're enjoying and being present with an actual meal. And the rest of the day, turn off every alert that doesn't involve an actual human who needs you. And when you choose to consume, pull instead of letting the world push. Pull in a well-curated newsletter. That beats an Instagram reel. Or a thoughtful, well-balanced article beats a spicy hot take every time. Your brain was built for vegetable soup. Warm, comforting, filling. Not the handfuls of Skittles we eat all day when we digest all the stuff that we do. So number three, okay, learn to filter really fast. In an era like this one, where anyone can manufacture a crisis in Photoshop, you need quick defenses. So try what they call the 60-second SIFT, S-I-F-T. It stands for stop, investigate the source, find better coverage, and trace it back. And when something looks super sketchy, don't dive deeper. Go sideways. Open a few tabs and see who else is actually talking about that topic. Lateral reading saves you from vertical panic. Number four may be my favorite. You know, I'm a child of 1975. I told you the list of all the stuff that I've been through, but I kind of like going old school. Getting back to basics is really retro chic right now, guys, and it rebalances your senses. Your brain didn't evolve for 10,000 glowing pixels screaming for your attention. So give it some analog love. Paper, pencil, real books and newspapers, an old school wristwatch, maybe even a CD or an LP if you can find something to play it on. These are cheap, high quality nutrients for a mind that's starved for grounding. And the last tip I'll give you, number five, I think choose a few slow media anchors. What do I mean by slow media? Well, pick one weekly long form piece you'll actually savor. Podcasts. Yeah, you could listen to this one or whatever your favorite one is. But pick a podcast that makes you think instead of just react. Or join a book club that keeps depth alive in your life. Slow media is like reading by lamplight in a hurricane, a calm corner in all of the chaos. What all this, these tips and tricks are doing is helping us try to learn to breathe underwater. Life in the digital world is unmistakably hard. We're writing the story of us during a technology tsunami. Whether you love it or whether you hate it, ultimately, we've got to figure out how to survive alongside it and make it work for us, not the other way around. We were born for lazy rivers, not water parks and wave pools. Yet here we are, standing in the great digital deluge of our age. The waters rise with every swipe, every ping, every pixel that shouts at us for our attention. But guys, we're still in control. Floods don't have to sweep us away. Not if we learn to plant our feet. And not if we learn to breathe underwater. Every choice you make, whether it be a silenced notification, a slower read, a single focused task, it's a sandbag on the levee, a small act of reclamation. Piece by piece, you begin shaping your own riverbanks. You decide what flows toward you and what flows past you. And maybe that's the quiet miracle of this moment. We may not control the storm, but we can learn to navigate it with intention and with each other. So if this resonated with you, if you found yourself nodding along or laughing at my old school memories, I'd love for you to wade deeper with me. Join us at the Story of Us Project, on the podcast, in this blog, in the conversations we're building one honest story at a time. Because in a world overflowing with noise, choosing what and who you listen to might just be the most human act left. Let's find the signal together. Till next time, friends. Peace be with you.